Genesis chapter 16, verses 6 through 16. But Abram said to Sarai, "Behold, your servant is in your power. Do with her as you please." Then Sarai dealt harshly with her, and she fled from her. The angel of the Lord found her by a spring of water in the wilderness, the spring on the way to Shur. And he said, "Hagar, servant of Sarai, where have you come from, and where are you going?" She said, "I am fleeing from my mistress Sarai." The angel of the Lord said to her, "Return to your mistress and submit to her." The angel of the Lord said to her, "I will surely multiply your offspring so that they cannot be numbered for multitude." And the angel of the Lord said to her, "Behold, you are pregnant, and you shall bear a son. You shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord has listened to your affliction. He shall be a wild donkey of a man, and his hand against everyone, and everyone's hand against him. And he shall dwell over against all of his kinsmen." So she called the name of the Lord who spoke to her, "You are a God of seeing." For she said, "Truly here I have seen him who looks after me." Therefore the well was called Beer Lahai Roy, as it lies between Kadesh and Bered. And Hagar bore Abram a son, and Abram called the name of his son whom Hagar bore Ishmael. Abraham was 86 years old when Hagar bore Ishmael to Abraham. May God add blessing to the reading of his words.
I've always thought being a mother has got to be the hardest job in the world. One of the things that makes it so hard is it's unrelenting. I mean, it's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year. It never ends. Another thing is that a mother's job is mostly thankless. I mean, children are not known for having thankful hearts and expressing appreciation. And even some children, once they grow up and move out of the house, don't do a good job of appreciating their mothers. Those are the kinds of challenges that every mother faces. There are a few, I'd call them extenuating circumstances that people have that even make it harder, make it worse. Did you know that in the United States, 24% of mothers are single mothers? That's hard. I can't imagine anything harder than that. They don't have the support of a loving husband to come alongside them and help carry the burden. They're really all alone. Of course, it would be naive to think that every woman who has a husband who comes alongside and bears the burden. But I don't have any statistics for that. Just anecdotally, talking with people, I know there are a lot of homes where the dad doesn't pull his weight and mom does it all. I have a message this morning for mothers. It's kind of a universal message because while it applies to mothers, it really applies to everyone else as well. And the message is this: God sees you and God cares. I draw it from the story about Hagar that Tony read a few moments ago, just those two simple points. God sees you and God cares. And if you'd like to turn to Genesis 16, we'll work our way through the text. I'll point out several things. This is verse 1, which Tony didn't read. I didn't want to have to read the whole chapter, so we'll read a portion as we go along and comment as we go. Verse 1 says, "Sarai, Abram's wife, bare him no children, and she had a handmaid, an Egyptian, whose name was Hagar." I want you to notice a couple of things about this Hagar. Number one, she is a slave. Now, the text I just read says she's a handmaid. That's really too soft. It almost sounds like she's a lady-in-waiting or an attendant or maybe a personal companion, but Hagar was none of those. Hagar was a slave, a female slave. Her compensation was food to eat and a place to sleep. Otherwise, she was at the command and call of Sarai. She served at Sarai's pleasure. Now, in America, we have a visceral dislike for anything related to slavery, as well we should. But in the time of Abram, it was pretty common practice. And his wife owned this slave named Hagar. I guess that would be enough to get her canceled, wouldn't it? But my point is that Hagar had no control over her life. God saw that her life was out of her control. She was a slave. Second thing I want you to see is she was from Egypt. What that tells you is that she was a foreigner. Now, Abram, in chapter 12, had taken his family to Egypt. We suspect that while he was there, he went there to escape a famine. It was while he was there that he picked up Hagar. Some surmise that Pharaoh gave Hagar to to Abram was a royal gift. We don't know that. Maybe they just picked her up at a slave auction. Maybe they were passing by an auction, and there was that little girl, and I presume she's fairly young, but there she was on the auction block, and Sarai said to Abram, you know, I could use a hand around the house. She looks like a good help. Buy her for me. However they came to possess this slave girl, she was from another country. That means a different culture. That means a different language. And now she's hundreds of miles away from home with no hope of ever seeing her home again. Her life was out of control. She was a slave. She was a foreigner. And then I want you to notice that she was a pawn. I'm going to continue reading with verse 2. It says, Sarai said unto Abram, behold now, the Lord has restrained me from bearing. I can't have kids. I pray thee, go in unto my maid. It may be that I will obtain children by her. Now, I'll stop there and explain. That sounds really wrong, because it's really wrong. In that culture, though, you need to understand it was not unusual. If a woman was unable to have children, it wasn't unusual for one of the slaves in the house to have a child, and she would adopt that child as her own. And so while it sounds twisted and wrong as it is, I certainly would encourage that action today, but that's the background of what's going on here. So she says, I pray thee, go into my maid. It may be that I may obtain children by her. And Abram hearkened to the voice of Sarai. And Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, her maid, the Egyptian, after Abram had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan, and gave her to her husband Abram to be his wife. Notice how Sarah took Hagar and gave her to her husband. She took her. I'm sorry, too. She took her and she gave her. Here's my question. What say did Hagar have in all of this? Well, the answer is none. She was a slave girl. She had no rights. She's forced to go to bed with this guy. And at the end of the passage that Tony read a few moments ago, see, a child comes from this union. And when the child was born, we read that Abram was 86 years old. So she's forced to have sex with this old man. She knew nothing about the canard we bat around in the United States. My body, my choice. Forget it back then. She was a slave. He could do with her as he pleased. Her life was out of control. Now, I don't know any slaves. I know there are sex trafficking slaves and the like in this country. I read about it. I've never seen it. I don't personally know anybody who's in that situation, but I have known a few mothers who felt like their lives were out of control. They did not have control of the circumstances around them. Other forces, other people did. But that's not unique to mothers. Anyone can feel that way. Men can feel the same way. Your life is out of your control. That's where Hagar is. And now I want to read to you the abuse. Now you might be saying, well, abuse, I've already heard she's abused. Yeah, but it gets worse. Look with me at verse 4. He, Abram, went into Hagar, and she conceived. When she saw that she had conceived, her mistress was despised in her eyes. Sarai said to Abram, my wrong be upon thee. I have given my maid into thy bosom, and when she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her eyes. The Lord judge between me and thee. But Abram said to Sarai, behold, thy maid is in thy hand to do with her as it pleaseth thee. And when Sarai dealt hardly with her, she fled from her face. The NET Bible translates verse 4 like this. Once Hagar realized she was pregnant, she despised Sarai. This is probably the first time in Hagar's life that she had a reason to feel superior over another human being. She's been sold into slavery. She has no rights. But now she has done something that her mistress cannot do. She has gotten pregnant. And it appears that she gloated and kind of held it over her and maybe had a sense of superiority. And Sarai hated her for that. Now, some have said that she was just as wrong as Sarai. Well, okay, but if I were in her shoes, I know exactly how she would feel, don't you? So for once in her life, she has the upper hand, and Sarai is angry about it. By the way, whose idea was this? Well, it wasn't Hagar. Hagar didn't seduce her master. It wasn't Abram's. Abram was just minding his own business. Sarai's the one who came up with this twisted scheme. And yet she's the one who's put out. She's the one who's angry. And Abram says, do to your handmaid as you will. And the text says she dealt hardly with her. The phrase translated dealt hardly means to afflict or to oppress. It was used to describe what one does to their enemy. As a matter of fact, the first usage of that word is in the previous chapter. In my Bible, it's just on the opposite page. This is chapter 15, verse 13. God said to Abram, know of a surety that thy seed shall be a stranger in a land that's not theirs. So Abram, I'm going to make you a great nation, but they're going to be slaves in a land that's not theirs. We know he was talking about Egypt. And they shall serve them, and they, the Egyptians, shall afflict them 400 years. That word afflict is the same word that's translated that describes how hard Sarai treated Hagar. Now, we know from Exodus chapter 1 that the affliction in Egypt was hard affliction. They whipped them with whips and abused them in all manner of ways. There's nothing in the text that says Sarai did those things to Hagar. And we don't know exactly how she made her life miserable, but she made Hagar's life miserable. And so, Hagar ran away. Well, do you blame her? She saw her life was out of control. She was a slave. She was a foreigner. She was a pawn. She was abused sexually, verbally, emotionally, probably physically in other ways. And God saw it all. She wasn't alone. God was aware. And I would say this morning that God also sees you, whatever your circumstances are. I hope that today, this Mother's Day, finds you in a position where all is well and you wouldn't change a thing. It'd be naive to think that describes everyone, though, wouldn't it? Because there's probably several in church who would like to change things. Know that you're not alone. God sees you. But more than that, and this is the second point of my message, God cares. Let's keep reading in verse 7. The angel of the Lord found her by a fountain of water in the wilderness, by the fountain in the way to Shur. Now notice where God found Hagar. He found her in the way to Shur. If you were to look at a map of Abram's world, you would find that between Israel, where Abram was, and between Egypt, where Hagar was from, there was this wilderness. It was called the Wilderness of Shur. Where do you suppose Hagar was going? She's trying to get back home, isn't she? Understanding that she's pregnant and alone, probably has few of any resources. It was a fruitless quest. It was dangerous. She would die in that wilderness. But she was desperate. The thought of spending one more day in Sarai's household, she just could not manage that thought. She wouldn't live another day with that woman. So she's trying to make her way back home to Egypt. And that's when God found her. By the way, God found her. She did not find God. And the reality is that's the way it always is. No one finds God. God finds them. If you think you found God, it's because God found you first. John tells us we love him because he first loved us. And notice in verse 7 who it was that found him. The angel of the Lord found her. What is the angel of the Lord? Well, I believe that what you're seeing here is a pre-incarnate appearance of Christ. And I know those are kind of funky words. Let me pick it apart. At Christmas time, we speak about Christ becoming incarnate, the incarnation. God became man and dwelt among us. That's what Christmas is about. So when you talk about Christ's incarnation, it's between when God, Jesus Christ, became a man. That happened at Bethlehem. Before that happened, though, Christ sometimes assumed a bodily form and made appearances to people in the Old Testament. I believe that when you see the expression, the angel of the Lord, what it's talking about is Jesus Christ. And if that's so, and by the way, we did a whole series about this on Wednesday nights, a year or so ago. It's just a fascinating thing to see how often and how active Christ was in the Old Testament, appearing to people and comforting them and helping them. So here she's sitting here by this spring, She is desperate. She's at her wit's end. And Jesus, the angel of the Lord, finds her. And notice in verse 8 what he says. Hagar. As you read the story of Hagar, and it continues later in Genesis. We're just looking at this part. But as you read the story of Hagar, it's really interesting that neither Sarai nor Abram ever called her by that name. It's always that slave, that handmaid. God speaks to her, and it's Hagar. It's almost as if Abram and Sarai refused to even recognize her as a human being. She was just an object. She was just a thing to them. Nobody is just a thing to God. God knows your name. You know, Dale Carnegie said that a man's name is to him the sweetest and most important sound in any language, and he's right. Imagine the comfort when Hagar, sitting in that wilderness alone, is approached by the pre-incarnate appearance of Jesus Christ, and the first words out of his mouth, Hagar. I'm just impressed at how God knows people. The psalmist said, and this is Psalm 139, O God, thou hast searched me and known me. Thou knowest my downsetting and mine uprising. Thou understandest my thoughts afar off. Thou compassest my path and my lying down. You're acquainted with all my ways. For there is not a word in my tongue, but lo, O Lord, thou knowest it all together. Thou hast beset me behind and before and laid thine hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain to it. That is a high thought. That the God of the universe, the creator of all things, knows our downsitting and our uprising. Modern English. He knows when we sit down. He knows when we stand up. He knows our thoughts afar off. Before we even think them, he knows what we're going to think. There's not a word in my tongue, but lo, O Lord, thou knowest it all together. He hears every word that I say. Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount told us that even the hairs of our head are numbered. God knows us intimately, and God cares about us. He found Hagar. He called her by name. And then he gave her instructions. Notice verse 9. The angel of the Lord said to her, return to thy mistress. Who's her mistress? Ooh, Sarai, that wicked Sarai. And Sarai wasn't wicked, but she wasn't nice to Hagar. Return to thy mistress and submit thyself under her hands. Now, I'm guessing most of us don't like those instructions. Essentially, what he has said is go back home and make the best of the situation. That's not what Hagar wanted to hear. And I suspect that's not what a lot of us would like to hear. Could God have changed the circumstances for Hagar? Well, sure, he could have. But you know what he chose to do was to change her heart. And God's really good at that. He doesn't often change circumstances, but he often changes hearts. See, the fact that God has called her by name speaks of a personal relationship. And then I want you to notice, we're going to skip a few verses. Drop down to verse 13. Because she will respond. And she'll call the name of the Lord that spake to her. Thou God seest me. She called God by name. In fact, she gives him a name that he did not previously have. The Hebrew name is Lahairoi. Lahairoi, probably, but... And probably there's a guttural in there somewhere because that's the way Hebrew is, Lahairoi or something. But she gives him a name, and it means the God who sees me. Something's happening in her heart. God meets her and calls her by name, and she responds to him, you're the God who sees me. She had probably heard Abram talk about this God, but she did not know this God. But now, this God has come to her and called her by name and given her clear instructions what to do. She has embraced that God, and it appears that just the very fact that God has seen her and that God cares was enough. It was enough. Enough to her to go back to that home and submit herself to Sarai and make it through another day. It's a beautiful story, really, about how God relates to broken people in a broken world. He doesn't always change the brokenness around us, but he does change our hearts, and he gives us the strength to endure the brokenness. God sees. God cares. Maybe the message for you today is, yeah, you're in a spot. Go back. Understand that God knows that spot. And God cares. He will strengthen you. He'll help you through it. Circumstances might not change anytime soon, but your heart can. Let's pray together, shall we? Father, I thank you for these words, and I know that for those who are really going through hard times, maybe they seem to fall short because we want to change circumstances. And Father, if it would please you, we ask that you would do that. But whatever else happens, I pray you would change hearts, and that we would submit ourselves to life's circumstances in a way that honors and glorifies Christ, that we would know you as the God who sees and the God who cares. I pray you bless each one in this room this morning, especially mothers who are struggling with the responsibilities they have. Give them the grace, give them the strength for this day and the days to come. In Jesus' name.